welcome to the Geek Night In, episode 44. My goodness, we've really done 44 of these. Ooh. I'm your host, Laura. I'm here this week with our regular co-hosts, Tilly.
Hello.
Kate.
I did say 44, just saying, by the way. Don't
you did. You got that right after you told me it was 43.
Yeah, because then I realised that the 42 episode was 2 weeks ago. I just don't want to start the podcast off with slander.
I never slandered. I said it's 44. How can I believe we've done this many? I never said on the air that you'd said.
Yeah, not on the air, but I heard it in my heart.
We're also here with Gemma this week.
Hello. I've apparently forgotten that last week existed.
That's fine. Who needs last week? No, last week was what? Who cares? What you doing with my laptop, Tilly?
I just wanted to add something to the topic list.
Okay. So yeah, we're here. We've got geeky things to talk about this week. Oh, Tilly's got a thing. Do you want to start with your thing?
Yes. So I went to London Film and Comic Con, or a very specific part of it called YALC, which is the Young Adults Literary Conference. And it was amazing.
It looked really cool.
So good. Yeah. That actress that you like was there. Hayley Atwell. Yeah,
it's not just me that likes her. Like, quite a lot of people like her.
Yeah, I know. But whenever I see her name, I'm like, oh, Kate.
Oh, I would like the fact that I'm being associated with her makes me very happy.
I didn't actually see her. But yeah, I met the author of The Knife of Never Letting Go.
I was just going to say, did you meet Patrick Ness?
I did meet him and I cried. And I was like, The Knife of Never Letting Go changed my life. And he was like, do you want me to sign it? And I was like, no, I forgot it. So I cried.
It's like, The Knife of Never Letting Go changed my life. Yeah, I hear that a lot.
No, he didn't say that. He was like, oh, wow, that's really good to hear. And I was like, no, seriously, it actually changed my life. And then, I cried and he threw a pen at me and I can't really remember why.
Why did he throw a pen at you?
Oh, it's because I told him I didn't have The Knife of Never Letting Go. So he was like, well, I'm not signing anything then. He threw the pen at me.
He was only joking. He sign something for you?
Yes, he did.
That's okay then.
I retrieved the pen.
I've not seen your signature from him yet. I've not seen any of your YALC signatures. You didn't show me any of your autographs.
Oh,
I'm just impressed that more than an autograph, you got an anecdote. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I also met Lucy Saxon, she's 22. And her book is called Take Back the Skies, and she goes to Expo every...
She goes to MCM.
Woo! Yeah, she goes to MCM. And for the last, four MCMs in a row, I bought her book about 2 years ago, and I've been trying to meet her at MCM every time. And every time I go to the stand, they're like, oh, yeah, she was just here.
Is this the one who was doing the signings?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, because we bought her books at one of them, and it was like, oh, yeah, she'll be here at this time on this date doing a signing, and we missed her. And then we came back, and didn't you buy, the sequels this year?
Yeah, I bought the sequel.
And she was doing a signing, and once again, we missed it.
Yeah. So this time, she was doing a signing, and I was like, sign them all.
This may never happen again.
Yeah, and I told her, I was like, oh, I've missed you at all the MCMs. And she was like, ah! Like, she thought I was really creepy.
Yeah, it's like, I'm a creepy stalker. I've tried to see you so many times and I keep missing you. Ah!
And then I felt really bad because, if I'm being, that much of a creepy stalker, I should have at least read her book.
Had you not read them?
I haven't read it yet.
These are the best things.
That was really bad. And then there was Samantha Shannon as well, who I also got her books from Expo, but I don't think she went. And she was really nice. But I met Helena Coggin, who she's 15. And she's just had her book published.
She's too talented.
They talked about her, at the panel that I saw her on. And they were like, oh, yeah, she's 15 and she's just had her first book published. And I was like, oh, I hate her. But actually, she's really cool. She'd fit in, so well on this podcast. Basically.
Should we get her as a guest?
Yes, let's do it.
You have her email address, don't you?
Yeah, she gave me her email address because I told her that we were going to adopt her.
Okay, we are going to get her on the podcast. We'll do that.
Can I just me and Tilly both said, oh, we hate her. We don't really hate her. We're just jealous of the fact that she is a published author at 15.
So I told her that I hated her, and she was like, yeah, I get that a lot. And then I told her that I loved her and we were going to adopt her. I was like, I don't give out mixed messages.
You have the most amazing way of meeting new people. Just gobsmacked.
But anyway, it was really amazing, and I met like so many amazing people, and I got so many amazing books, and oh, it was just great. And there was this one guy who like, he was like an indie author, like he self-published his book, so he was there promoting it, and the book itself looked really cool, and I was gonna buy it, and then he turned out to be an asshole.
And what, he said, what he about said him was an asshole?
He said something really sexist to me.
What, was this an author, sorry?
Yeah. He was there promoting his book, and I was like, oh my god, your book looks amazing. And I was just reaching for my money to buy it, and then he said something really sexist to me. It was something like, oh, I don't expect you to get your pretty little head around it, or something like that.
Oh. Yeah. How do you know you hear this particular anecdote?
And I was like, well, I'm not buying your book.
It's like, fuck you, I'm keeping my money. I'll go buy a different book.
How is that good, like, salesmanship? What?
I think this is possibly why he's indie then.
Yeah.
It's like, he turned out to a publisher, and the publisher was going to give him, like, a book contract or whatever it is. And he's just like, well, you know, I don't expect you as a publisher to wrap your pretty little head around it, you know? Just take me on my word, my book's good. And it's like, fuck you.
Oh my god, that is the worst.
Yeah, but apart from that, everything else was really good. And I got loads of books. I think I mentioned that already, but I'm really excited. like, there's a book called Delirium, which is, like, it's set in the future, where they've discovered a cure for love, as in, like, the chemical reaction that happens when you fall in love with someone. They found a way to cure it. And it's, like, set in this future where love is seen as a disease, and it's so good.
So, yeah, you had a good time with books, and you want to go back and have a good time with books again next year.
Yes.
So, hooray, Tilly found a new convention
hopefully,
that she likes.
Next year, I'll have my book ready to go out on submission.
While we're here, do you want to talk about your book and get that out of the way while we're on book chat?
Get it out the way.
I say get it out the way. It seems a convenient segue. We're talking about books. Do you want to talk about your book?
Yeah. It's having major structural edits at the moment.
But that's good, because that implies there is a structure to be edited.
Yeah.
And before you started writing, there was no structure to be edited whatsoever.
Well, what you were saying to me was that you've suddenly decided to do a lot of extra stuff in the latter arc of the narrative.
Yeah, because the way I wanted to do it was I wanted to have 2/3 of it, like, them trying to get back to their home. And then the last third would be them at their city. But then the way that I've written it now is that actually there's a lot of things that are supposed to happen now in this, like, last third of the book. And it's like, oh, shit. Like, I've written 50,000 words, and now I've got all this stuff to do in 30,000.
Well, the
30,000 to 40,000.
Here's the thing. Your book can be a bit longer. You could have a lengthy novel. Not for a debut.
Very rarely publish a book that's over 100,000 words for a first-time author.
Yeah. Well,
I learned that at Yelp.
Well, the other suggestion then is finish the book, see what word count it's at so you know how much you have to trim, and then go back to the walking section and be like, right, now I have to butcher all of my beautiful tiny word babies.
Yeah, that's going to be really hard. I'm already, like, I'm trying to be really brutal with it and be like, you know, this isn't necessary, this doesn't further the plot, cut it. I've already taken out a whole character.
Oh, that's really sad.
Sorry?
R.I.P. that character.
Yeah, it's really sad. I liked him a lot. But he doesn't do anything to further the plot, so he had to go.
Just think, if Tolkien had cut out Tom Bombadil, the world would be in a better place.
But the only reason that he could have Tom Bombadil was because he'd already had the Hobbit published.
True. You know? Also, he was clearly, a sadist. I'm not allowed to read those books, Lord of the Rings. My sister won't let me. I have a really, really nice box set of them just after the films came out, with, like, loads of nice shots of the films and things like that, just after Fellowship came out. Never read it, because my sister, every time I go for it, she's like, don't do it to yourself. don't put yourself through Tom Bombadil.
My sister was watching Lord of the Rings today, and she was Facebooking me, and she's 12. I don't know if I've mentioned that, but she was like, oh my god, Frodo is so useless, and we had this huge argument about Frodo Baggins.
I love it. Like,
you just don't understand.
Lord of the Rings films, like, I think when I was on holiday with Kirsty, we had this huge discussion about Lord of the Rings and about how without Lord of the Rings, we wouldn't have Game of Thrones. Like, without the films, we wouldn't have, like, the Game of Thrones TV show. We wouldn't have had, like, the Hunger Games. Like, it was the first hugely successful adaptation of a trilogy that everybody thought was unadaptable.
Yeah.
Like, nobody thought that anybody could do it. It was like, why would you even try? And, like, now everything gets adapted because everybody knows it's doable and that you can do it. And even if it's not very good, you're still going to make enough money off it that you can be like, oh, well, it doesn't really make a difference. Like, who cares? Like, Hunger Games, even if it's rubbish, they'll make, you know, millions and millions. And it's like, yay, who cares? And things like that. So Lord of the Rings always has big respect.
Yeah. Well, I'm holding out, like, in quiet moments at work, I do find myself wondering, like, who would I get to play this character in the movie?
Have you settled on anyone for your cast that you definitely want in your film adaptation?
Yeah.
Who's Kate going to play?
Every character, it's going to be a modern art piece.
Is there anyone you'd actually like Kate to play?
Yeah, Kate can be one of the dragons.
Yay!
Let's hear your dragon voice, Kate.
No, that's a Batman voice.
I ruined my voice doing a Batman voice this week. It did not go well. My voice is not.
Where's the girl? Where is she? Where is she? I'm the Batman.
What's the name of the girl who plays Sansa Stark?
Sophie Tanner.
Yeah.
You mean Kate? Kate is the one who plays Sansa Stark.
Sophie in headcanon. The Cassia. She can play Cassia. I think she'd make a good Cassia.
She's a good actress, actually, Sophie Tanner.
Yeah, she is. I think
considering really young when they started.
Yeah.
And it's like, which, you know, although there's been lots of child actors and actresses, if you look at, like, say, the first Harry Potter film compared to, like, the first season of Game of Thrones, it's like, yeah, there's a difference.
Is there anyone on this podcast yet who hasn't heard about the dream I had last night?
It's amazing.
Gemma, have you heard about Tilly's dream?
I have not.
Well, be prepared.
Speaking of Harry Potter, right, so in my dream, I got home to my flat, and Laura and my mum were, like, frantically cleaning the whole place. And I was like, guys, what's going on? And they were like, we've got an inspection. And I was like, oh, shit, okay. So I, like, was helping them clean. And then there was a knock at the door. And, like, Laura and my mum, like, were both holding hands. And they went white. And they were like, oh, my God, keep calm, keep calm. This is it, this is it. And I was like, okay, guys, like, chill. It's just it's just an inspection. We'll be fine. And so I opened the door, and it was Voldemort and Snape had come to do the inspection. And I was like, oh, I see why they were freaked out. So I was showing them around the flat to be like, yeah, yeah, look, we're looking after it. It's, you know, it's all clean. And in the kitchen, there was a tray, and it had, like, a couple of teacups and a teapot and, like, the leftovers of some cakes and stuff. And you know how, like, in dreams you just know stuff? And you don't know how you know them. And in this dream, I knew that these teacups and things were the cups that we used when Harry Potter came round for tea. And Voldemort, I knew that Voldemort knew it as well. So I was, like, frantically trying to make up an excuse as to why Harry Potter's teacups were in my kitchen.
Because he would know that they were his, yeah.
That didn't mean that Harry Potter had just come round for tea. And then I can't remember how it was connected, but I was wandering around Hogwarts, and it was the summer holidays, so there was no one there. And I, in one of the walls, I stumbled across Dumbledore's secret stash of kittens.
I would much rather have seen that as Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Which I still haven't seen. I've got that to see tomorrow. Yeah, I'm currently rewatching.
Do you want to tell us about your whole rewatching of the series and how that's going?
Well, I don't know what to say, because it is a rewatching. I mean, most of the films, I actually only saw them at the cinema. I mean, I remember seeing Philosopher's Stone at the cinema. I must have been like 15 or something.
Oh my God, that was like the best day of my life.
Yeah, we're rewatching them because we want to play Lego Harry Potter. So we're rewatching the film so that we'll get the Lego references in this ongoing series of cooperative gaming. Yeah, but we've actually gotten up to Deathly Hallows Part 1, which is the last one I've seen. I've never seen Part 2. I've read the book.
It's all right.
The most embarrassing thing is the fact that my sister was in Part 2. I've still not actually looked out for her. She was an extra in the epilogue. Around the Hogwarts Express. And I don't know if she's visible. So I have to try and spot her.
Laura and I's our second date. We saw Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I was going to go complete side tangent. You can see both of my parents in, what was that? Was it called Rush? That film about the 80s Formula One drivers?
Yeah, it was about with Chris Hemsworth in it.
Yes. You can see them in one of the crowd scenes as extras. My dad has a hilariously weird handlebar moustache because they, when they were in wardrobe being like dressed up by the costume people as extras, they were like, right, you know what you need? You need a moustache. And they gave him a stick-on handlebar moustache because apparently he wouldn't look right in that crowd without a handlebar moustache.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, there is, I will try and find a photo to show you all at some point, but yeah, there is my dad without his moustache, and then there he is in the 80s with a big handlebar moustache.
Did I say last week, I can't remember, talking about Connor in Game of Thrones?
Don't think so.
Well, I will mention it, I can't remember. But basically, obviously, been doing my massive Game of Thrones rewatch, and there's a guy on Twitter called Connor Walshy. Hello, shout out.
I know of that name, Connor Walshy.
Yeah, really, really cool. And has quite distinctive big hair. And I knew they were in Game of Thrones because they live in Belfast, which is obviously where a lot of it's filmed. And I kind of mentioned before, like, yeah, I've met like Kit Harington and Rosie, what's-her-face, who plays Ygritte and stuff. But I'd forgotten all this, and I was watching it, and for, like, the first four seasons, all the episodes I'd already seen, I just, like, flicked through all the bits that weren't, obviously, to do this answer, because it's like, come on, I've got, you know, I was getting through, like, a series a day, whereas now in season five, and season four and season five, I haven't seen it ever, so I was like, I've got to watch all of it, and I was just sat there, and I was like, la 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 la, oh! And it's Connor in the background, and I was like, this is amazing.
I remember your tweet about that.
Yeah, and I tweeted him like, was this you? And he was like, yes. And I was like, this is so exciting. And then there was him later on like carrying a bundle, and it looked like a little pig, and apparently it wasn't a pig, but I pretended it was.
My family's been extras in so many weird things. Like, I know my sister was an extra in a dinner scene in some BBC show about a school that happened a couple of years back. As was my mum. My mum was an extra in it. Like, you see her walking through the background of a shop being a teacher, I think. And then my dad's in the background, in a background shot of, I think it's the same show, just being a dad at a parents' meeting.
Okay.
Like, my parents just pop up as, and my sister just pop up as extras in things. I've never been invited to be an extra in anything, and I feel so left out.
In an episode of Skins.
You were an extra in an episode of Skins?
I was, yeah. It was filmed in, right, Sherlock, The Great Game, that episode, where they end up in the swimming pool, yeah?
Yeah.
That swimming pool is a shitty, grotty little swimming pool just outside of Bristol. It costs, like, £10 an hour to hire, because a friend of mine who I've known since I was like four is like Olympic standard synchronized swimmer. Like, she's amazing. She basically has gills. And she used to do some of her training at this horrible, horrible swimming pool because it was like, you know, £10 an hour to hire. So they'd just go and get like 4 hours out of it. Like, she would literally, she swims from like 5 o'clock in the morning. She gets up to go swimming, like, insanely dedicated. But yeah, they filmed Sherlock there. They film a lot of stuff there because it's so cheap. And she, through her swimming, they were like, we need extras for this episode of Skins. And it's a pool party scene. So it's at this pool. And we had to wear like prom clothes. So I bought, it was like, yeah, let's go. It's a day off school. Like, three of us went. And it was like, I bought like a £10 little prom style dress off eBay, which was like falling apart by the time it arrived, let alone when I put it on, like sewed it to a bra so I didn't have to wear like straps. And yeah, we went, and a lot of it was like hanging around. We didn't get paid, but like the people were like, oh, you're going to meet the cast. And I was like, one of the cast asked me for a cigarette, and I was like, I don't even know who you are. Like, it was like, yeah, I meet the cast. I couldn't have told them from like Adam. Seriously, I had no idea who they were because I've never really been interested in skin. But we got chili con carne like as our payment, and we were there till quite late. And there's like, you can see me just like dancing, and she runs past me. And it was this whole thing like, oh, you might have to kiss someone. And it was like, are you prepared to kiss someone? And it was like causing all this drama. And like at school, we were like, are you going to kiss someone? Are you going to kiss someone? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to put that I'm okay with kissing someone. And the guy I was stood next to, I was like, I'm okay with kissing if you want to kiss. And he was like, okay, cool. Didn't kiss me. I was like, I mean, he wasn't, you know, I just was saying if you wanted to, we could. And he was like, no, I'm good. But the directors were really rude. And I made up my mind that if I was ever a director, I would be kinder to extras. Because they like, we had no idea what was going on. We just kind of did what we were told. And then they get annoyed with us like, why aren't you here? And it's like, because I'm literally being paid in chili con carne. Like, what do you expect from me? Aww. I have no idea who any of you are. And all you've done is yell at me. And this guy doesn't even want to kiss me. But yeah.
I have two fun stories about extras. One of them, my mum was being an extra on one of the things she did an extra shoot for, and she got talking to someone else who was being an extra on the same scene, and she came back and told me about this. She was like, oh yeah, I was being an extra with this guy. He's the singer in this in some band, apparently. They're called Missing Andy. And I was like, I know that band. You were being an extra with the singer of Missing Andy. And she was like, yeah, yeah. He gave me one of his CDs. I'm going to go see one of his gigs in Southampton.
What? Your mum is such like a mover and shaker.
Yeah, my mum went to a Missing Andy gig in Southampton. And I was like, can I come? And she was like, oh, he only gave me one comp ticket. I was like, how's this fair? I know who they are. I like their songs. I want to go. And then the other one, this is less to do with being an extra. The one time I was on TV was because I was on an episode of Short Change on CBBC.
That show was amazing.
I will find the VHS and I will like send you privately a video if you want to see it. Okay. I was on their Hit Squad thing where it's all about like, hey, I had a consumer complaint. And this was like the orientation day for year seven at school. I had to duck out halfway through the orientation day to go and shoot with the BBC to do my, like, I think it was like a 4 or 5 hour shoot for a 2 minute thing that went on TV.
Oh my God.
Because I bought some walkie talkies that were also headphones, and they were advertised ages 6 and up. And I was like 11. I think it might have been 8 and up. And I was about 11. And it had like teenagers on the box. So I was like, yeah, these will fit. And they didn't fit. So I complained.
No.
Yeah, I was like, they're too small. And they wouldn't fit my sister. And she was only 7. That is a line from my appearance on Hit Squad. They wouldn't fit my sister and she's only 7. Also, we talked about
that. This is amazing.
It's adorable. Like, we talked about the fact that I'd raised the money for them at a car boot sale. It's like, by the end of the day, I'd raised £25. And I'm like, I've got £25 in my hand, like, shaking it back and forth like I'm some kind of, like, celebrity with my wads of cash. It's kind of hilariously adorable. So, yeah, I was on an episode of Hit Squad.
Woo. I loved that show.
Yeah.
Was it Otis?
Yeah, I never got to meet any of the people you actually see on TV.
Oh, that's sad.
I met one producer from the BBC and her assistant who came to do the filming.
That's cool. Also, I love that show.
You can see the back of my friend's head on an episode of One Born Every Minute.
There's a lot of heads in that minute.
She was walking down a corridor as they were filming, and you can see her. I think it was at Southampton Hospital.
Oh, I've just remembered her when I was in an NHS film thing. I forgot about that. Yeah, I was in NHS, what was it? They did like a BBC did a thing where it was like a day in the NHS, and they did like 6 episodes of that. And one of those was filmed at Charing Cross GIC. So I'm actually like right front of frame doing my voice training exercises.
You'd think voice training at the GIC would be something that they wouldn't like put on TV without letting you know.
Well, they did. We all, a bunch of us all signed.
Okay, that's fine. Like, the way you said it, I thought this was just like, oh, that's me on TV at the GIC.
No. I was aware of the camera right next to me.
What am I on?
You're on a road safety video.
Oh, is this the one, the school one? Okay.
Yeah, this podcast is wonderful.
This has been a fun, weird episode.
Can I tell it? I know it's your story, but it's my favorite story.
Fine.
Okay, basically, like, this was when I was doing my work experience, so I was 14. So when Laura was about 17, she used to drive a moped, and she got hit by a 4x4.
You can see this on YouTube. The footage exists on YouTube.
And it's completely not her fault. Like, she had right of way, and the car like pulled out in front of her and she slammed into the side.
Yeah, basically this car doesn't stop at a give way point and just kind of hits the side of me and knocks me into the other lane.
And I was going to say it's really funny. It's not that funny.
It's funny because I came off fine. I had some scrapes and bruises and somehow did not die being hit by a 4x4. Like, my moped got completely crushed into 2 pieces. Somehow I came off with just scrapes and bruises. Yay.
But anyway, so a little while ago, she got some points on her license when she was driving to work.
Well, I never got them on my license.
The defense rests.
Well, okay. I had to go to a driver awareness course to not get points on my license.
Oh, yeah.
This is when I was still working at Lidl, and I was doing a 6 a.m. starting shift in, like, as a covering shift for another store, somewhere else that was a bit of the out the way, and I had to drive like down roads I didn't know at 5:30 in the morning. And I was doing about 40 in a 30 zone at 5:30 in the morning. And I tripped a speed camera. So I got 3 points and they were like, well, you can take 3 points or you can come do a driver awareness course.
So anyway, she did the driver awareness course. And one of the videos that they show to as an example of... what was it, bad driving or accidents or something?
It was used as an example to show, like, hey, here is how, like, this driver's, like, we pick the video apart. This driver's at fault, but this is where the driver who wasn't at fault could have predicted it and could have avoided it, even though they shouldn't have had to. This is how defensive driving can get you out of this situation, etc.
So, yeah, that was the video of her getting hit by this 4x4. Was the video that they showed at the driving awareness course.
Yeah, so I had my moment halfway through the driving awareness course where I was just like, they have not acknowledged this, but that's me. So in my specific area at one point, I don't know if they still do it, but in Dorset, if you had at one time a driver awareness course, you'd have seen a video of me being hit off my moped.
That's just amazing that you saw your own...
Yeah, and we hadn't given them this. They'd presumably found the video on YouTube and, like, decided to use it. It was just like,
it was so funny.
Okay.
I remember I was at work and she texted me to talk about it and I laughed in someone's face.
That is hilarious.
I wasn't supposed to be checking my phone, but I walked out the door, I had my phone in my hand, and I laughed in my manager's face as she was coming around the corner. And then I told her what it was and she laughed as well, so it was fine.
That is funny. I'm sorry, but that is funny.
Yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah, we also used that footage for a while in Dorset for some schools. I used to go around schools and do talks for teenagers about the importance of moped safety. And basically, I would go and show them that video and be like, I was fine because I was wearing all this safety gear. If you weren't wearing all that all the safety gear, this is what would happen. And then we go to a slide of someone who's degloved their hand.
Yeah.
Which is gross and disgusting.
Let's not talk about
degloving. That's, if you want to find out what that is, it's a gross thing that happens if you don't wear motorcycle equipment and then are in an accident. So yeah, I used to, like, footage of me being knocked off my bike was used as like cautionary tale footage for teenagers in Dorset.
So you're like the Troy McClure, like, hi, I'm Rockstar. You may remember me from
yeah
that's sure to change. a random driver's awareness course in Dorset.
Now, what I love is that Laura can genuinely do that, as you may remember me from any podcast ever.
Yeah.
I thought you meant Troy from High School Musical for a minute, and I was like,
we're all in this together. No, no more. It's bad that we know that much. Oh, sorry.
I love High School Musical.
I know this has been a little bit of the Laura and Tilly show this week. We will get to Jayden Jammer any minute. I do have one more thing I want to get Tilly talking about. You finally like really got into watching Steven Universe this week.
Yes, I have been watching Steven Universe. I take back everything I ever said about Steven Universe.
All of your criticisms are rescinded. Yes.
It is quite childish and it is quite annoying.
But
as a children.
Yes. But yeah, like once you get past that, like when you get actually into it, I was watching it and I'm like crying like 5 times an episode. I'm like, how is this a kid's show?
I know. This is what I was trying to insist on Tilly. And like, I understand her hesitation. And like the couple of times Tilly watched it, it was very much like your response was sort of, it's just a bit childish for me. I'm not getting into it. And then you gave it one more try. And then you were like, oh, I see why you like this now.
Yeah, it takes a good 10 or so episodes to get into. Like, that's the problem, I never made it past the first three.
They're only 10 minutes long, though, so it's about, like, an hour to an hour and a half of investment to really get into it, but...
Still too long.
Yeah, it ideally would be shorter than
My
that.
My time is valuable.
It's not as bad as, say, Adventure Time, which is about 20 episodes, which I think they're about the same length, but it's about twice as many episodes. But yeah, then you get to like, now you have experienced all the things like Amethyst crying at the place with all the holes in the rocks.
Yeah, and I've been singing On the Run at work all day and people have been looking at me funny.
Do you want to sing it now? Go do some singing.
No,
I don't care about what the others say.
Though I guess there are some things that will just never go away.
I wish that I could say that there's no better place than home.
But home's a place that I have never known. Yeah.
Oh, that song.
I was haunted by the fact I haven't watched this yet all over Saturday because there were so many people cosplaying characters at NERCON that were just like, I only recognize them because, like, everyone is talking about Steven Universe. I don't know what you're referencing.
I'm very tempted to do my Pearl cosplay at Gnome Worlds.
There are canonical lesbians.
There are canonical lesbians, and it's great.
You said canonical lesbians, then. I was like, what's a
No, there are multiple canonical lesbians, and it's great.
I've got a friend who she doesn't speak to me anymore.
Which friend is this?
Kat.
Oh, okay, Kat, yeah.
Because we went out a while ago and I bought like a plaid shirt. And she said to me, like, without really thinking, she was like, I can't wear plaid because it makes me look like a lesbian.
Who cares if you look like a lesbian?
And
is that a bad thing?
Well, I just went, what does a lesbian look like? And she got really flustered and she was like, oh, you know what I mean.
And then doesn't talk to you anymore.
No, she Facebooked me the other day, but we didn't really talk.
So, yeah, you got as far as the end of season one, and now you're like Steven Universe.
Yes.
Because all of the feelings, particularly the, everybody told me gem stuff's dangerous. Guess I didn't believe it. Oh, that song.
I can verify that my stuff is dangerous.
I tried my best to get Tilly to sing again. She very rarely sings. We got her to sing once on the show this week.
Twice.
That is twice. Yay! Woo!
Yeah, that's it for like a year.
Anyway,
my gift to you, podcast listeners, is that I will not sing anymore.
We have monopolized this episode too much. So, Gemma and Kate, which of you has something you would like to talk about?
Gemma has been to places. Talk about those places.
you got a travel card.
I got a new travel card. I don't think I've actually mentioned this on the podcast before, but I collect travel cards.
I don't think anyone on this podcast or listening to this podcast is surprised by that.
Is it like
I'm getting to the
like
point
Zone
now
1
where...
to 5 travel cards, or you know,
yeah, I think it's more like Oyster cards, but for different regions. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the same kind of card. So it's the stuff that you just tap on barriers. Basically, Sweden's covered with them. Each county has its own card. So I've had one for Stockholm, obviously, and same as I've had one for like an Oyster card. But usually when I go to places for like work and conferences and things, it makes sense to get a travel card there because then most of the buses are cashless. Mm. So it's now ending up at the point where I've got Helsinki, London and Stockholm, and then three of the counties, the other counties in Sweden. So I can basically make my way now from Stockholm to Denmark just on travel cards.
Oh, I have a travel card story for you, Gemma. And this I thought was genuinely interesting. So this was when I was on a work trip. This is when I was... Sorry. I mean that in that I am usually... I usually don't find... Shut up. Stop that, Billy. What I meant is I don't usually find travel stuff interesting. I love that you find it interesting and I love listening to you talk about it, but I don't usually get excited about it myself. And this was a time when I got excited about it myself about... Sorry, one second. Sorry, squeaky door. And this is a time that I got excited about travel stuff myself. This was when I was in Amsterdam for work travel recently. So I got a travel card there. And they don't do their travel cards based on distance or number of stops. It's done on the amount of time you spend on the public transport. Yeah. So you order like an hour, like a 1 hour public travel card or a 6 hour travel card or a 24 hour travel card.
Yeah, it's the same in Sweden, actually.
Yeah, I've never been somewhere like that. And I thought that was a really interesting idea because particularly when you're a tourist, it's really easy because it saves you having to poorly attempt to say the names of places that you don't quite know how to say. Also there, they were really good that it had like, this is the stop you're at, this is the next stop coming up, and this is the stop after that, and here's the expected arrival times at each stop on the bus, which made it really easy to find, like, when I don't know what the place looks like, but I do have a name written down on a piece of paper, it made it much easier to find. So, yeah, Amsterdam has really cool travel card stuff.
It's something which Europe does a lot better than, like, most of Britain does, because I now take for granted the fact that Swedish and Finnish buses, they all announce each stop and they display it on boards inside the bus. So they're actually very accessible, because not only can foreign travellers listen out for these things and look for the word, but also they're very... they're good for deaf and blind people. Things like relief maps at stations, which have braille all over them and distinct symbols for where lifts are and where stairs are.
Yes, again, all that happened in Amsterdam as well. And like even the trains did the same, where it's like, here is the next three upcoming stops. Here's the time now. Here's the time that we're expected to arrive at them. I'm like, this is so helpful.
And this is why I love it.
Yeah, I think while I was in Amsterdam, I started to actually understand, like, oh, this is what all that travel excitement's about.
Yeah. And incidentally, I love teasing you about the fact you get awkward about, like, yeah, about my interest in travel. Yeah.
I find it fascinating. I love listening to you talk about your travel interest, even if I would never get as excited about those same things. That's what the Geek Nights Inn's about. We all have different interests. This is about us being excited about our own things together.
I do invite people to come along to the Video Brains at Nine Worlds talk, because I will be doing one on my interest in public transport, but specifically related to games. And like, I don't want to, because it's a 9-minute talk, so I don't want to give too much away. But basically, like, there are reasons why I like transport this much. It's just that I don't do a great job of explaining it on the spot. But I'm planning a whole talk around it, at least. But I suppose I should say that the reason I picked up an Östgöta Trafikkort was because I was visiting Linköping, as I mentioned earlier, for Nerkon, which is the Nordic region's biggest geek culture, particularly anime, and cosplay festival. It's a 4-day convention, and for anyone who knows Louise James, who we had on the podcast a while back, it's basically Louise! The convention. It's like all rainbow hair and cosplay and Lolitas.
Why am I not there?
I would recommend that. Actually, people do consider coming over.
Demand that they fly all of us out to do a live Geek Night in there. Demand that is the one thing you want to see at the next NairCon, and maybe they'll fly us out.
It would be too dangerous to take Louise there, because she would, like, transmogrify into, like, the literal emoji that is the heart eyes emoji.
Yes.
And it would be like, oh no, we don't have a Louise anymore. We just have a heart eyes emoji.
I just remembered that on my phone, I have a heart eyes emoji, but in a cat. And I nearly died. So I can't even imagine what would happen to Louise.
That was literally what would happen. It would be like, oh no, sorry, Helen. We tagged Louise and stuff into a heart eyes emoji.
So if anyone's interested to look into it, I mean, they have loads of photos and stuff up at narcon.se because web things don't have access to, like, just Swedish characters. That's narcon.se.
Woo!
Oh, Laura, I'm getting... Oh, I was getting echo just there.
Yeah, I heard it too. It sounded like you were being, like, really grand about it. Like, this is the name.
Knock on.
That's fine. It didn't come through on our end, so it should be okay. Sorry about that. Let us know if it persists.
All right, we'll do. Yeah, so, I mean, I should say I was only there for one day. And even then, I was running around actually doing quite a lot of work stuff. I was going to be running a twine workshop, which kind of didn't work out, but for reasons I won't get into. So, yeah, most of the time I was mostly just, like, absorbing the experience. But it is genuinely, like, a really friendly festival, and dare I say it, they possibly, because they've been running for longer, they have more awareness of accessibility and diversity than even Nine Worlds does.
Blasphemy!
They have, like, whole tracks, like, they have a series of talks called Ner Consent, which is all about diversity awareness and making sure that media can be inclusive to people. Because I find, particularly with anime fandom, like, already gender boundaries, for example, are massively blurred because there's so much cross-playing and the characters depicted in the anime tend to be from different sort of, at least gender spectrum backgrounds and things like that. Mm. So there was a lot of, like, just general diversity on show and some gorgeous cosplaying. It's worth saying as well, actually, NERCON hosts the Nordic Cosplay Championships, which is broadcast by the Swedish national broadcaster.
Oh, wow.
And in actual fact, I mean, I doubt anyone outside of Sweden would be able to watch it because they have like a BBC iPlayer kind of thing here, but it's probably region locked. But if you do watch the Nordic Cosplay Championships, somewhere near the end, two of my friends from Lightsaber Combat do like a duel on stage.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yay. I'm so excited about some of the cosplays I have coming up. I've got some fun ones to do. I'm finally doing my N7 Commander Shepard one. It's probably going to be ready about 4 or 5 days after Nine Worlds. Ooh. So my first chance to wear it's probably not going to be until either Alcon in Leicester in September or MCM in October. But I'm so excited to do my Commander Shepard costume. That has been one of my dream costumes for a long time.
Did you say it's the ME2 costume?
No, the N7.
No, like, oh, sorry, Mass Effect, yes, 2.
It's the Mass Effect 2 version of the N7 armor. So it's okay. The slightly sort of charred and battered up Mass Effect 2 version of the N7 armor.
The one that can actually be recolored. But yeah, I just asked because I'm now halfway through Mass Effect 2 and loving it.
Ooh, yeah. It's, can you see now, being halfway through Mass Effect 2, how Mass Effect 1 might be difficult to go back to?
Yes, I was initially rather skeptical because a lot of people have told me that once they get into Mass Effect 2, like, really savor the experience. And thankfully, somebody pointed me at the Shadow Broker DLC. And although I haven't really gotten into that yet, I'm glad I picked it up because I can see where it's fitting in.
Yes.
They did say, like, if you can only get one, get that one.
Well, the Shadow Broker is my favorite of the Mass Effect 2 DLCs. That being said, the Arrival DLC is really important as well. Because if you don't play the Arrival DLC, Mass Effect 3's opening makes no sense. Because it's like, wait, how did we get here? There is a narrative bridge that explains, like, how do I put this? The beginning of Mass Effect 3 starts with Shepard in a place. The explanation of how they got to that place is in DLC. It's not in the main game of Mass Effect 2.
Okay, well, I'll be sure to add that in at some point.
Suggestion I have, when you get there, Mass Effect 3, you have to play the Citadel DLC, because that is basically 4 hours of space house party at the end of the world It's like, hey, the world, like, everything's about to hit its big climactic moment. Let's have a silly four-hour house party with BioWare-style choices, and it's the best part of the whole Mass Effect series.
Okay. Well, yeah, like, going into Mass Effect 2, I was initially skeptical because Mass Effect kind of hit me with a wall of, oh my god, like, we're finally realizing what people were going on about. But the combat does massively change. I mean, that's the most obvious thing, because that's mostly what you're playing with. And initially, I didn't like it. It's like, now I have to pick up ammo, and I don't get to, like, mess around with the guns as much. But actually, it does make a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot more fluid. Like, a lot of the other tweaks they've made to the combat just feel so much more fluid.
Just mechanically playing it, it is a much more polished game. It's much more sort of like... fluidly designed on a visual and narrative level. And then there's also far less standing awkwardly in elevators.
Yes. Oh, but my goodness, some of the vistas and the art in that game are just like really ramped up. At the moment I'm kicking around on Ilium, which is the Asari sort of corporate world. And just looking out at that, it's like, this leaves Coruscant for dust.
Yeah. Also, Gemma mentioned on Facebook that she'd gone to probe Pluto. And I did have to ask her, did you do the childish thing and probe Uranus? Which, for anyone who hasn't played that game, you can go to our solar system and send a space probe to Uranus. And all you get is the ship's onboard AI just saying... really, Commander? Just sighing at it. Like, did you really do that? It's like, yeah, I did. Sorry, Edie.
I loved the fact that the joke went totally over me. Like, I think I sent a probe to Uranus and nothing really happened. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, you did not even notice that you'd sent a probe to Uranus.
I was somehow immune to the pun. I think Futurama put it to death with the scientists outlawed that joke in the mid-2000s. What's it called now? Your rectum.
Futurama, you were so great once upon a time.
Yeah.
So, yay, hooray, Mass Effect, woo.
Speaking of games, I've resurrected our podcast Neopets account this week.
Oh, yeah.
How is it going?
Our Neopets are dying and they're all sick.
Oh, dear.
Oh, and the guy stole all our money.
Anyway,
not
Kate,
very well.
Kate, how's such your
responsible
week been?
People.
Kate, how's your week been?
Pretty chilled. It was my mum's birthday. Happy birthday, mum.
Happy birthday. Woo!
And I bought her a Kindle, and she's so funny. Like, she's setting it up, and she's so confused by it, and it's different to mine. So I had to, like, go through it and, like, make sure everything was set up. And she was like, I want this. Oh, I want that book. And I was like, Mum, it is very easy to spend a lot of money. I was like, just buy one book, read it, buy another book, read it. And she was
Get Kate to go on torrent websites and find you some free copies.
Well, but, like, there are so many, like, classics. Obviously, there's loads of them available for free. But there's so many good deals on Kindle. And it's, like, you can get overexcited. Like, oh, my goodness, this book for, like, £2. And it's, like, are you ever going to read that book? So she's bought some stuff. So she's very pleased. I've been doing lots of crafting this week, which is my geek thing. I've been making, there's this really cool thing, and Tilly, I'm going to show you some of this at Nine Worlds because it is your jam. It's called Zentangle.
Oh, I got an email from Hobbycraft about that.
What is it?
Okay, so basically there's two ways you can do it. I got taught how to do it. It was like a little workshop thing by a woman who was selling like craft materials at a show in Glasgow. And like, she was a really cool woman actually. And she had like gone from working in an office to doing this full time to being a saleswoman full time. So, and like a businesswoman. So that was quite exciting. Like, she obviously really believed in it. Basically, it's a way of drawing. It's like organized doodling. And, you know, it's a way of designing. Oh, sorry, hiccuped. It's a way of designing patterns and things. So I've done some things like they're on my Instagram and stuff. So you can go and have a look at them. But, like, they're just nice pictures, usually in black and white, but you can do it in colour. And it's just, it's just organised doodling. And there's a way to do it, like, to get started that's very simple. And you get, like, a nice pretty picture, like, on a sort of tile card. And it's like, wow, that's amazing. But because it's very detailed and you have to really focus, it's very, very good for anxiety because it's practicing mindfulness, you know, that whole focusing, being in the moment, which I really struggle with because of, like, that's part of my anxiety. I'm always somewhere else in my head. So it kind of brings you to the zone. And there's this stuff called, I don't know if any of you ever messed around with this when you were younger. It's shrink plastic. It used to be branded under the name Shrinkies. Yeah, or like shrinkled. Yeah, and basically, like, you'd draw on this plastic, put it in the oven, and it would shrink up and go like hard plastic. And, you know, make key rings and stuff out of it. So I've been doing that with some, and you heat it up under like a hairdryer. And then I've been making like little key rings and things. But there's loads of different things you can do. And if you're not really, you know, I mean, I can't draw for anything. I'm rubbish at drawing, but I can do this. But if drawing isn't your thing, and or, you know, maybe if somebody hasn't got very steady hands for any reasons, you can buy, there's like magazines and also books, and they're calling it like adult colouring. And it's got the Zentangles already done, and it's for you to colour in.
Yeah, that's the one I got. I got a free one from Hobbycraft.
Yeah, Hobbycraft is like, you know, always going on to like the bandwagon, and this is like the big thing at the moment.
Yeah. This kind of stuff is perfect. Like I found really calming, like the Pokemon Art Academy on 3DS, because again, that is just, it is adult tracing and coloring.
I find it so soothing, and like, yeah. I've been doing like the craft place that I go to, she did a class with it, with a bit of Zentangling, making, and she kind of had some ready-made stuff, so to make it into a card. And like, my mum for Christmas bought me a couple of stamps that are like, it's an owl, and it's quite big, like big space, so you can draw the designs in. Yeah. And so like making stuff like that. But yes, I've been doing a lot of that this week. Also getting back into my crochet. I've been crocheting a blanket for like a year, but as all blankets are want to do, like, and my mum's got jumpers from like 20 years ago that she hasn't finished. Like, it's just kind of a thing that maybe it's my family, maybe it's crafters in general. But yeah, so at the moment I'm making a beautiful, beautiful blanket that's all autumnal colours. It's like, I've got like a light green, a like burnt orange, some purples, some like mossy colours. And like, these are wool that I've picked up from like all over Europe. Like, I've, you know, grabbed a couple of bags in Switzerland, grabbed some in Sweden, actually, I've got a ball from Stockholm. I would call that my Gemma colour. And but yeah, so I've been doing lots of crafting. I've also been reading some comics this week, trying to get, I realised I haven't really read any comics for like 6 months. So I was like,
considering you're doing my LGBT comic panel.
But I've had so many amazing recommendations. So me and Kirsty, who's also on the panel, we're reading some mainstream stuff, like Young Avengers, which was by Kieran Gillen and has a gay couple in it as like primary characters. And it's not about like, although stories about coming out are very important, it's kind of very normalized. And like, they have problems, as every relationship has problems, but it's not specific like, oh, they have this problem because they're gay. So that's quite good. So that's what we've started with. And then we've got Batwoman, and I'm just looking at loads of webcomics. I'm trying to think what else I've been up to.
Oh, webcomic suggestions that are really worth looking at. The Tab Kimpton's Chaos Comics.
Tab Kimpton Chaos Comics. Thank you.
You can find that. I think Tab's stuff is absolutely fantastic. He has done some really great like running web comics that are basically just, each one of them is a different LGBT pair, very distinct pairs. There's like 7 or 8 different stories, and they're all so sweet and lovely, and then you get to see both, all the relationships from both sides, and oh, they're so good.
That is cool. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, webcomics are amazing generally, because like, the one I'm looking at right now, which is called As the Crow Flies, is all penciled, and you would never ever see art like this like in a mainstream comic, and it's just beautiful. And I could, like, as somebody who can't draw very well, like, I draw stick figures and stuff, I could make a webcomic. I feel like I would be happy putting my little stick figures up. Because webcomics, like, it's something that I'm just...
So long as the content was there, then the stick figures, people would be like, yeah, that's fine. It's an endearing art choice.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. It's as long as you're, you know, you can justify any style, of course, but yeah, you can have this style. And it's like, well, that's my style. So
like, it's deliberate abstract minimalism in an attempt to take away the extenuating artistic elements that can detract from the core thematic elements of the narrative.
Oh, okay. Precisely what works for SKCD. It's because you get to the core aspects of like the often really rather good, like complex science and geekery
exactly.
jokes.
Exactly.
I started rewatching Orange Is the New Black, like from season one.
Ooh.
Good time.
And I completely forgot about my favorite joke of the whole series, and I nearly died. It's when Piper starts working in electrical, and Nikki's drilling a hole in the wall. And she's like, what are you doing? And she's like, it's an art piece representing the futility of blue-collar workers and vaginas.
And I love Nikki.
How did I forget about that? That's amazing.
Okay, again, tangent again, just because you mentioned Orange Is the New Black. I still think in season three there is one thing that is really, really sweet and reassuring. And it's when one of the characters is trying to write something and they're really disheartened about it. And another character turns to them and just says, look, you realize some publisher like turned around to J.K. Rowling and was like, Harry Potter, pff, fuck that. Like, any great piece of work can get turned away and laughed at. Doesn't mean it's not fantastic.
Is that Rod Cocker and...
Like, yeah, that's the Rod Cocker story, yeah.
The ice axe.
Was it on this podcast I was talking about the guy who picked up Harry Potter for Bloomsbury Publishing? He's the CEO now. Like, he started out as like an agent's assistant or something for Bloomsbury Publishing.
Yeah, he was just like,
and
short...
he snagged Harry Potter, yeah. And he was like, have a look at this, and they didn't expect it to do very well. And since he got Harry Potter, he's now the CEO of Bloomsbury Publishing.
Yes, because basically he was the person who was looking at the long list of books to be like, which ones do I put, like, the things in front of my boss? It's like, this one, do it.
Well, it was they either had to make him CEO or cope with the rest of their lives, him just going, told you so.
It's like, I don't think you could do anything but make him CEO. It's like, right, if you're not going to make me CEO... I'm taking all of the money. Thank you. Or I'll go tell J.K. Rowling. It's like, right, I'm going to be my own publishing house because I picked out your book. So do you want to come to my publishing house? Right. Have we got anything else we want to talk about this week? What else is on the topic list while we have a look? Oh, have either of you, Gemma or Kate, seen either Inside Out or Ant-Man yet?
I am seeing Inside Out in approximately an hour and 15 minutes.
Ooh. No, because I still suck at watching anything.
Okay, very briefly, me and Tilly watched both of them yesterday.
Ant-Man is super cool and Inside Out is really sad.
Yeah, Inside Out's really sad, but in a good way. Like, one of the most touching Pixar films in years.
I cried like four times.
Yeah, and Ant-Man, can you see why I said it's my favourite Marvel film? That's not a crazy thing for me to say. You're shaking your head. You realize the listeners can't.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yes, no.
Yeah. She said, yes, I can understand. And no, it's not a crazy thing to say. I was just looking at you like, are you going to pick up that you're shaking your head visibly that won't pick up on the mic?
I took my sleeping pill. I'm tired.
Oh, Tilly.
So anyway, if you like the MCU, go see Ant-Man.
Yeah, that too. Also, both there are two. I will say there are two end credit scenes. I missed the second one the first time I saw Ant-Man. Someone had to tell me there was a second. The first one sets up a really cool character, and the second one really does a cool thing of setting up another film.
I'm excited!
I know!
It's gonna be Civil War in like a year.
Civil War's only a year away, and I want Captain America Civil War already. I want the Civil War! There's gonna be a Spider-Man and a...
I forgot about that.
Yeah, they do vaguely acknowledge in Ant-Man as a throwaway line that Spider-Man is now part of the MCU. Like, there is a line where they're like, oh, we're looking for more superheroes, and someone's like, oh yeah, what kind of superheroes are you after? We've got one that shrinks, and we've got one that sticks to walls and climbs up stuff with webs. It's like, that's Spider-Man. You got Spider-Man now. So they now acknowledge, yes, we have Spider-Man. We can acknowledge he exists. We still can't acknowledge Magneto existing, obviously, but... should we wrap up there for this week? Feels like a good place to wrap up.
Yeah, because the only other film I'm seeing tomorrow night is Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Stockholm has
a public viewing thing, so a bunch of my friends and I are all
with your Swedish instructions, you have to understand.
Oh, yes. Yeah, because for anyone who has or hasn't been to Rocky Horror, either the stage show or a showing at the cinema, I saw the stage show in Woking once. But with either one, anyway, there's audience participation. And it's generally understood. Like, most people just learn it by cultural osmosis. But because it's not often done in Sweden, the cinema wrote up a guide. So it's all, like, it's all the lines I know, but with Swedish instructions. This is hardcore.
Yes, most of them are descriptions of dance moves to a particular dance, I imagine. Okay, so we're going to wrap up for this week. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. It's been wonderful to have you all. Time to do self-promotion. So, Kate, where can people find you on the internet?
At whatkatie_did, at the Geekagenda UK. And also, if you want to check out my Zentangles, my Instagram is at ekmcalpine, and just look for the hashtag Zentangle.
Ooh, and what about you, Gemma? Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me most places as Raygun Goth. Mostly Twitter is the best place, and you can follow my various links through there. Also on Flickr and stuff. The usual things.
Hooray! And what about you, Tilly?
I am on Twitter at Gathering Tilly. And you can find me on Patreon at Valence Killer, where you can read my book.
Woo!
Yes, patreon.com/valencekiller for $1 or more a month, and you can read my book. And
hooray!
That's like 50p, and it buys me hot chocolates for when I get sad.
And then you can find me at Laura K Buzz on pretty much everything. So Laura K Buzz on Twitter, iTunes, Patreon, YouTube, where I'm now doing like 3 videos a day. Usually one episode of Beyond Good and Evil, one dating sim episode, and something else. I'm working it out. I might be doing the first few episodes of Life is Strange ready for episode 4. Other than that, you can find me on Destructoid Monday to Friday. You can find me on Polygon doing reviews, and you can find me on The Guardian doing interviews. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll have another Geek Night in for you next week. Bye.
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 Bye.